Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. And this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 142, and it is the week of November 12th, the week of the Richmond Marathon. And I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, center of the universe. And this week's show, I'm going to go over and talk about the Mountain Masochist 50-mile trail run that my good friend Ashland Tom ran. And Ashland Rodney also accompanied him for the second half. And the name of the show for this episode is There's More Than One Way to Experience 50 Miles. And the reason it's called that is I experienced the 50-mile trail run at aid stations and in Tom's truck and sitting in a lawn chair and waiting, for the runner that I was supported coming through. And I tended to see a lot of the same people. And it was kind of neat. It was a beautiful day in Virginia in the Blue Ridge Mountains in just simply gorgeous fall foliage, a little chilly. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of the details from the race as we go along in the show. And I've also got some audio clips from the race and the really more of the pre-race dinner and then the start of the race. I had some technical problems with my digital recorder. Apparently, you have to, every now and then, you got to do a real good cleansing of the memory. Otherwise, it tends to tell you that you've run out of space even though you don't have any files on the digital recorder. I've realized that before. I just didn't think it would happen this past weekend. But yeah, there's more than one way to experience 50 miles in a 50-mile ultra. That was Tom's third 50. He's done the Bull Run, the North Face 50-miler, and then, or not necessarily in that order, and then Mountain Masochist. And this was my first experience going up and being a part of the Mountain Masochist. I have heard about it before. It is actually a race that I had considered entering at one point in time, but after I realized that it's actually over 50 miles and has the 12-hour cutoff, me being realistic, I just don't think I would make that cutoff because I've been close each time I've done a 50. Actually, my first 50 was over 12 hours, second 50 being below. Plus, it's a trail run, which I am not fully attracted to as a big event. It's just not something that I have a huge interest in. I do like trail running, but not, these mountain climbs type of thing. So that's how I experienced the 50 miles. And as I said, I'll get into that a little bit more as the show goes on. I also want to mention that I listened to a great podcast on, I want to call your attention if you're interested in ultra running, to a podcast that I found that I'm sure other people already know about. It's not new or anything, but it's got great interviews. These guys clearly have the time and the contacts to sit down with folks over the phone and pick their brain over stuff. And it's called UltraRunnerPodcast.com. And I'll put a link at AshlynDave.podbean.com if you tend to go to the site, my site, to check out the links. The interview was with a guy named Frank Bozanich, and he's a kind of an uncensored type of guy. He's a ultra runner from kind of a throwback from way back, kind of a pioneer. And I think the reason I liked listening to him was because he likes road racing. He likes ultras on the road, and that's something that I'm kind of interested in a little bit more than total trail running. I like road marathons. I like road ultra marathons. I'm getting ready to do my third one on the road. I've signed up to do my third one. I'm not getting ready to do it. I'm getting ready to put training in high gear. That's the Race the Graveyard 100. I'm going to do the 100K. That's March of 2012. But anyway, I really liked the interview, and I would encourage you to go check that out and check out some of the other interviews on that podcast. I'm not getting anything from them for plugging their podcast. I just found that I like it myself, and some of the interviews are with some of the top people in the sport. And it seems that the interviews always tend to be with people who are not arrogant. And I really like that. They just seem to be very down to earth. Unlike some other people that I've come across at some of these other races that obviously they know who I am and I know who they are. But for some reason, they just don't want to be friendly. But I'll leave that alone. I won't go into all that. But this guy, Frank, had a great quote. And it doesn't really pertain to me that much because I don't ever win anything and I probably will never win anything in my life. And I'm okay with that. I know that's just part of who I am. But he said during that interview, he said, in order to win, you have to learn how to lose. And I kind of like that. And what he was talking about, some of these guys that the elite in the sport, because I think the question was posed to him that, some people drop out if they know they're not going to win the race. And I guess he was a little bit against that. His philosophy is that if you're going to learn how to win, then you need to learn to not be on, not be the first one sometimes, and that way it makes winning a lot more valuable. And anyway, I like that. I encourage you to go check out the interview with Frank Bozanich at ultrarunnerpodcast.com. And like I said, I'll put the link in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. Okay, well, I'm going to play some of these audio clips from the Mountain Masochist. Pre-race dinner, some of the speeches, and the highlight was listening to Jennifer Farr Davis, who holds the thru-hike record for the Appalachian Trail of 46 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes, and that's 2,181 miles, in case you were wondering. She started out in Maine and went south, and it's essentially walking two marathons a day. She beat the previous record holder, whose name is Andrew Thompson, which was 47 days, 13 hours, 31 minutes. And he was actually at the pre-race dinner as well. And I think I've got her whole presentation. It's only about 10 minutes. Very interesting to listen to her. She's an ultra runner as well. And I remember seeing an article in Blue Ridge Outdoors magazine last summer. I guess it was last summer. I'm not really sure when she did the record. I think it was in August. So I guess it was over the summer. An article about her feat, and the interesting thing about it is that so the record holder is a woman, and I think that's awesome. And she beat Andrew Thompson's previous record by a day, and coincidentally he's only one of 10 finishers of the Barkley Marathons, and that was in 2009. I mean, just real fit, real incredible, physically able folks. And so let's get into that. First clip that I'm going to show is Clark Zeeland, or I'm not going to show it, I'm going to play it for you. Clark Zeeland, the race director, welcomes some of the runners. He talks about, he doesn't really introduce David Horton. I didn't get that part, but David Horton starts to speak. If you don't know who David Horton is, search him on the internet. You'll get plenty of information on him. He's, a throwback ultra runner, interesting sense of humor. And he used to be the race director for the Mountain Masochist, and he runs something called the Beast Series out of Lynchburg of ultra marathons. A big trail runner. He was also a record holder for the through hike of the Appalachian Trail. And we'll get into Jennifer's presentation, which, like I said, is only about 10 minutes, maybe a little bit less than that. But I found it to be very interesting. And then there's a clip of the beginning of the Mountain Masochist, and then I'll get into some of the other race details from the race.
Of the Mountain Masochist. It's pretty awesome, yeah. Welcome to everybody who is not from this area. We have runners here from over 30 states. We have three runners from Canada, Horton. Three from Canada. Where are my Canadian runners?
Hey.
Where are they? Don't tell me they took off. Hey. Come on. All right. Alexandra back here from Quebec. Thanks for coming down. I also want to say right up front, thank you to our presenting sponsor, Patagonia. Got two guys over here. Keep giving and giving and giving, and I'm so thankful for those individuals. Of course, the guy who started it all, sitting right over here to my left, who continues to help and just give himself. No booze allowed. Come on now. Thanks to Horton. Charlie Hesse. who here is consciously gunning for an age group award? Stand up, if you will. Come on, stand up. I already spotted you out, Sophie. Sophie spied Al. Who else is going for an age group award? I sent out all that information to you, all that fun data.
All right, this is David Horton. He's getting ready to speak. He's the one that started this race some years back.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. It's a neat thing. This is the last year of the race as it has been for many years. Basically, there's going to be some changes next year. What they're going to be, we don't know yet. So, sort of special, sort of cool, sort of sad, too. I hope that we keep the gist of the course as it always has been. Same course as usual. Think about that out there tomorrow. Don't go running. Don't be stupid. That's what I'm always telling people. Don't be stupid. That's what I'm telling my students. Don't be stupid. Don't go in a direction and you don't see any streamers. And keep going and going and going and going. People do that. Don't you be the one that does that. Also, if you see the course marks the wrong direction, that has happened. There's been a number of years, at least four times I can remember, where streamers have been taken down after we marked the course. We marked the course Wednesday and Thursday, and we checked some of them today, and we'll be checking a lot of them tomorrow. But in between when we mark it and race day, people have taken down the streamers and put them some other direction. And I know Tom Green one year saw some streamers down the wrong direction and changed them. So if you know for sure that you marked the wrong direction, change them. But don't do it if you're not sure. Unless you know there's someone right behind you. Have I thought about that before? Oh, yes. A number of times I've been in races and I thought, you know, all I'd have to do is put this streamer right here, and they couldn't catch me. But anyway, I wasn't supposed to do that. Same course as usual. Follow the course. You see someone going off course. Names. They're not complimentary. In fact, we like those best. Going after a 10th finish, Buffalo Butt, Dorothy Hunter. Dorothy, where is you, girl? Take it out, too, but anyway. She's a sweetheart. By the way, someone told me, Dorothy told me beforehand, she said, I'm really not in shape to finish under 12 hours. Someone told me, going after 20th finish. And if you don't finish, you don't get the awards. You don't break 12 hours, you don't get the finishing awards. Jeff McGowan, going after 20. Where are you, Jeff? He's 19 for 19. Now think about, and probably going to help some other people stand a little while with respect to have run the race before. You who are doing your first masochist, in the history of the race, 82% of the people who have started, hey, bouncy girl in shadow back there. 82% of the people who have started have finished under 12 hours. Don't be part of the 18%. Don't be one of the loser parts. Amazing what she has done. We went out today and she couldn't keep up, of course. But she's a has-been. She's over the hill at 28 years of age. It's phenomenal what this young lady has done at her age. Phenomenal. 28 years of age. 18 three times. Long trail and tons of other trails. PCT too. It's just amazing. I'm amazed by what she's done. And of course, as I talk to Scott Heine, stand up. Not Scott Heine. Heine Swahe. Stand up. This guy, a few weeks back, did a triple Ironman triathlon. First American finisher, 40 hours, which... And he did... No, don't you cheer for it. He did it on talent. Not on training. I said, what are you going to do now?
A triple.
What are you going to do now?
Get up at Lake Anna.
She's
going to have babies.
Isn't that up at Lake Anna? I didn't say she's going to have babies now. Because she's not sure. But anyway, we're driving home, and I said, I asked her, what am I going to say about you? Jennifer Barr Davis, the fastest person ever on the race.
I was honored when Clark asked me to speak a little bit because this is such an awesome race and one of my favorite events of the entire year. And while I speak, I just wanted to address the two main questions I get after this summer, and that is, why would you do it, and then how did you do it? The why goes back many, many years. I actually thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail as a 21-year-old by myself, and it took almost 5 months, and it was one of the hardest things I had ever done in my entire life. And I was having a particularly hard day on the Priest in Virginia, and I was hiking by myself downhill in a cold, dreary rain, and all of a sudden this man in short running shorts comes running up the path, and he has a monstrous wristwatch on, and he stops it, and he's like, hey, how are you? What are you doing? Where are you going? Are you hiking by yourself? Do you stink? I mean, he literally leaned over and smelled me. He's like, you're a thru-hiker, aren't you? To David Horton. But, you know, after learning what he did setting the Appalachian Trail record in 52 days in the 90s, I was so impressed that when I got to the base of that mountain, I actually took a picture of his truck because I was so in awe. Not of him, but of his truck. At the time, even though I was in awe of what he had done, I also thought he was crazy. I thought anyone who would ever try a trail record on a long distance trail is absolutely out of their mind. But then, several hundred miles later up in New Hampshire, I was hiking down Mount Washington and I see these two guys bounding up the mountain. And I'm dragging my feet, tripping on rocks. I have a big, heavy pack. And these guys are joking and they're laughing and they're smiling. And so I have to stop and ask who they are, what they're doing. And it turns out to be Andrew Thompson and JB. Sure enough, they're going out to try to set the overall trail record. And they looked so happy. And so once again, I think, okay, they're crazy and out of their mind, but gosh, they're pretty happy doing it. So those two images stuck with me. And after finishing the AT, Horton managed to find me again, stay in touch, and said, you have to come try one of these ultra races. And I'm not really a runner, but he said, well, come try Promised Land. You can hike it. And so I came and did Promised Land and hiked with a little bit of running and thought, oh my gosh, this is so much better than carrying a big, heavy pack. There's aid stations everywhere. People are cheering for you. I can really get into this. So I continued to do more long distance hiking and a couple more ultras. And then in 2008, something happened that really affected my life, and that was I got married. And I thought at that time it would slow me down. Surely I can't go do 2,000 mile trails now that I have a husband, but instead of slowing me down, it actually sped me up. My husband's a school teacher. He had the summers off. I still had the desire to do long trails. And so we decided in 2008 to go after the women's record on the Appalachian Trail as a supported hike. Once again, this is awesome. I don't have to carry a big, heavy pack. I sort of get why these guys would want to go do it. Let's push our limits, see what's possible, and have a good time doing it. And we were successful. We finished the trail in 57 days. 38 miles a day, I believe. But at the same time, we had a good time. And I honestly thought as a woman that I should be happy to be within 10 days of the overall men's record.
Yes.
And doing the trail in 57 days was not an easy feat, but it also made me realize that setting an overall trail record on a 2,000 mile trail is not like winning the masochist. It's not like winning a 100 mile race. It's very different. You don't have to be the strongest. You don't have to be the fastest. What you really have to be is a student of the trail and a student of the people who came before you. And so at that point, I had this theory that really it didn't have to be a man who had the overall record on the trail. And the worst part about that theory is I knew I was probably the only one who was going to be willing to test it. So after doing a few more hikes with my husband, we went back this past summer to try and set the overall record. And it was absolutely the hardest summer of my life, and Andrew Thompson actually wrote to me before the trail and said about the trail record, there's not a day where I'm glad that it's over, and yet not a day goes by where I wish I wasn't still out there. And I didn't understand what that meant until now, because it really is the best memory of my entire life and the hardest experience of my entire life. And nothing was more difficult than the first 12 days. I got shin splints on day 4. I had never had shin splints before, and they're miserable. My legs were collapsing underneath me as I was walking, and I was just walking all day, so that was not a happy scene. I had some, you know, unfortunate weather in the White Mountains. In fact, on Mount Washington, I was up there in the dark and in a rainstorm, and I just kept thinking, damn, Andrew Clark and JD, why did they look so happy up here? Like, on top of this mountain. And you know, things were very difficult. I got sick on the trail the first day in Vermont, and actually got to the point where I came to the road crossing and told my husband, I can't do this. I can't keep going. My body has not adapted to this. I think we need to quit. And it's funny, because anyone who knows my husband knows that he is the kindest, sweetest, most gentle man in the world. He does not like to see me in pain. He does not like to see me push my limits. And he basically looked at me and told me to suck it up. he said, I owed it to myself, and a little bit I owed it to him to keep going. And he was right. And it was amazing to me at that point that he believed in me more than I believed in myself. And after I made it over that next mountain, Killington, I really never looked back. Andrew Thompson was a constant hiking partner in a way that I always knew where he was. We called him imaginary Andrew Thompson, and I pretended that he was really mean, because some days in my head I was like, he's really nice, he's worthy of a trail record, why are we working so hard to beat him? But he really was a motivation, and I would not have been able to hike the trail in 46 days without his previous record and his notes. And I am not faster than Andrew Thompson, and I'm not stronger than Andrew Thompson, but because of his record, I could see where he did well. I could see where maybe there was a room for a mile or two an improvement. And the thing that I think really pushed me over the edge is once I crossed the Mason-Dixon line, and particularly because I had so much support from the trail running community in this area and in Asheville where I live, I didn't go a single day where someone didn't come out to the trail to help me after that point. And Horton came out to help me. Rebecca Trinipo was an awesome storyteller. She was with me for 2 or 3 days. Kevin, Smith, Jeremy. I saw so many familiar faces, and that to me was the aid station I needed to keep going. I was fatigued, I was nauseous, I was tired, but every day someone came out and cheered me along the way. So when I got to the end, when I got to Springer Mountain, I was done. I had given 100%, I was totally depleted, but I knew that it was not an individual accomplishment at all. It was truly a group effort. It was a community effort that allowed me to hike. And yes, I hiked, but I did not run the trail in 46 days, and I could have never done it without Andrew Thompson, David Horton, and the other people that came before me. So, you know, I have this dream that Andrew Thompson's going to go back and reclaim the record, and I think he might have other adventures planned at this point, but, you know, hopefully someday, maybe if he has a little boy, or if I have a little girl, they can continue the rivalry. I think it's great that it's opened up the doors to a lot of women and a lot of people who now might consider trail records or look at them differently. So I'm actually going to show you guys a quick 3 or 4 minute clip of my time on the trail this summer.
We've been in the Masters, this is the 29th year. We don't do what we're not supposed to if we know, and we didn't know that. He says, well, it was blocked off and I couldn't hike the trail. I thought, can you not step under it? I thought, was there a sign that says you can't do it? But really what I'm getting to, and she said, okay, yeah, that's okay. It's a good thing I didn't talk to you last year right after I'd seen this. And yeah, that'd be okay to use. And I said, we wouldn't put any streamers up at all up that trail. She said, no, you can put confidence streamers. I just don't like to see the trail blocked off. So anyway, what I'm saying is be careful where you park. Park on the right side. Make sure all four tires are off. Don't anyone stop and let runners off at the visitor center there tomorrow morning. Don't anybody park there that's not supposed to park there. If we make one person unhappy, they'll call them, and then they'll call us. And so we got to think about the future races. So anyway, be very careful and think about that. It's a sad.
They went. The first part of the course, I think the first 5 miles were on mountain pavement road. Then I went into a Jeep trail, lots of single track, and I made it around to all the aid stations. I was with Rodney, and he went and met up with Tom at around the 26.9 mile mark, which was the, I think it was Long Mountain, what was it called? Long Mountain Wayside Aid Station, which was 26.9 miles, and Rodney stayed with Ashley and Tom for the rest of the route. A couple things I picked up on from spending my time out there in the mountains on that day, which was November 5th. You want to have the right gear when you're going to be a spectator, and what I mean by that is lawn chair, gloves, hat, heavy coat, layers, that kind of thing. The temperatures never got out of the 50s all day, even though there was some sunshine, and there was a noticeable difference between sitting in the sun and sitting in the shade. And it was I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit, but at the end, when I was in Montebello, there was a country store, and that's where the race ended, and I set up all of Tom's and Rodney's warm clothing and set it in the sun with my chair. So the sun would kind of warm it up. So when they got it, when they got in and they wanted to put on warm clothing, we didn't have to go back to the car. I had it right there at the finish. Well, by the time they finished, the shade had come over the chair, the area where I had placed their gear. So, you know, it got chilly, never got out of the 50s. I had gloves, I had a heavy winter coat, and I wore long pants. I could have used a hat, and I could have used probably another layer under my jacket. But that having that chair was awesome, because there were several aid stations that I sat out and waited, you know, probably 30 to 45 minutes. A couple times, me and Rodney actually missed. I only used the chair actually when after Rodney joined Tom at the halfway mark. But it was nice to be able to sit down and wait, because. Most of the time I had to, you know, I got there early, you know, you'd have to drive quite a bit to get to the drive. Sometimes you had to drive down the mountain and come back up a different road to get to the next aid station, because you weren't allowed to follow them on the Jeep trail. I always get a kick out of the running commentary of aid station workers, especially those who are not distance runners whatsoever. You couldn't have these events without, you know, volunteers at the aid stations. And a lot of times the volunteers at these aid stations are not runners. They're not marathoners. They're not 5Kers. They may not even be walkers, but you got to have these people out there. They're just invaluable to these events, and it's really nice to have them out there, and so many people come out and spend their day doing these types of things. But I find it interesting to listen to them talk amongst themselves and make comments about the runners that come through, and just comments about the event, and you know, not, and it's all from just being ill and not having enough information about why people run marathons or even ultra marathons, and I just get a big kick out of listening to some of these people talk. They're real nice. They always are. And but it's really the same jokes at each aid station, just different people, same jokes, same, you know, not understand why people do running jokes. It's always the same. Another thing I picked up on was fill up your gas tank when you have a chance, especially if you're driving up and down mountains. In Virginia, the elevation really is, you know, these events is 4,000 feet. It's, and, you know, it's not significant compared to some of the races out west. But the scenery is just beautiful. The fall foliage just made it especially cool. And there are some steep mountains though, and definitely drove along the edges of some of these. And as a result, the truck I was in, Tom's Toyota pickup truck, you know, consumes gas. So one time, Rodney and I went down for breakfast at Hardee's of all places. We had to go to Hardee's. Actually, it was actually a late breakfast, early lunch. We'd already had a regular breakfast. So this was the only time we were going to be able to eat lunch. And that kind of segues into my next lesson learned, which was should have packed my lunch. But we were down in town called Buena Vista eating at the Hardee's, and we were kind of running short on time because we wanted to get back up the mountain to meet Tom at I can't remember which aid, the next aid station, and we skipped the gas station that we thought about stopping at, but we didn't have time. Well, once we get to the top and we drove, it was one aid station, we drove in 6 miles in the backcountry on a Jeep trail, you know, way back in along the side of a mountain. We just missed them by 10 minutes. So we came back out, and then that was before Long Mountain. And then I dropped off. We saw them at Long Mountain. That's where Rodney joined them. I had to go get gas because it was the light had come on the empty. So I drove back down the 9 miles back down the mountain and got $20 in the truck. And I should have filled it was at the very same gas station I passed earlier when we were at the Hardee's. So Should have filled it up at that point in time. Also, I should have packed a lunch. I could have eaten on my own terms. I don't know why I didn't pack a lunch the day before. The day before we drove out to the race, which was about 2.5 hours from the Ashland area. I had plenty of time. I took the whole day off, and I had plenty of time to pack a lunch. And why I didn't, I don't know. I should have known that we were going to be out in rural areas where there weren't, you know, nice places to stop. There was no Subway, no, you know, sandwich place. It was Hardee's, and thinking back now on how some of that food smelled just kind of makes me sick. I had a chicken biscuit and a egg and cheese biscuit. That was my lunch, and that was around 10:15 in the morning. Didn't eat dinner until 7 that night, so I was obviously pretty hungry, but I had snacks. We weren't able to update any of Tom's family back home because we had no cell phone service where we were. I got one text message out when Tom and Rodney were at the 41-mile mark at one of the aid stations, and I got a response back from Tom's wife, and her response was that she was starting to get worried because she hadn't heard anything. Well, the reason was is because we just couldn't get anything out. And let's talk about the pre-race dinner. I can't even read my some people I met. Pre-race dinner was really good. It was at a hotel called the Kirkley, which had a huge ballroom, and that's what it was. I mean, it was, God, there must have been 50 tables in there. It seemed like everybody was at the pre-race dinner. I think there was a mandatory meeting at 7 for announcements, but you didn't have to. Tom bought us tickets to the dinner. It was really good, just a big pasta buffet, you know, just bread, salad, pasta, different types. We sat with a guy named Derek from Pennsylvania. Neil and Sarah from King William, some people that we met, sat with Drew, and ended up running into Slug, which I'll talk about in just a minute. Listener of the podcast, I ran into him. So, you know, it was a good event. I really enjoyed crewing for Tom. I really did. It seems to be something I'm pretty good at. I have an idea of what the Mountain Masochist is about now. I don't know if I would ever be able to make the 12-hour cutoff to get a finishing time, and so it's not necessarily something I think I would sign up for, but I would definitely go out there again and crew for anybody that needed help with that, because I enjoyed driving through the mountains and spending that time out there, a lot of it being by myself for the second part, which I've done before. I was that way down in Atlanta when Rodney was doing his 50, I guess October of last year, and we drove down there and to help him out. I spent a good amount of time by myself. And, you know, you chat up some people, but for the most part, the spectators aren't, you know, those people aren't necessarily chatting amongst themselves, but so much. A couple of notables. The winner was Eric Grossman, 6 hours, 58 minutes, 22 seconds. The female winner was Sandy Nypaver, 8 hours, 5 minutes, 11 seconds. Some other notables, of course, Tom was 11 hours, 16 minutes, 34 seconds. Ultra-running friend of ours that we see at all these things, who's a real nice guy, Drew Fratrick, 10 hours, 47 minutes, 58 seconds. He's run this one before, so he had a lot of knowledge for Tom. Rodney ran the second half with Tom, and it was estimated to be about 54 miles. I think Tom's Garmin had said something like 52 and some change. There was some debate about what the distance was. I would say Roddy probably put in a good, probably put in a marathon distance. Couple other notables, another friend of ours from the Hanover area, Mariana Inslee, 11 hours, 28 minutes, 27 seconds. And, Slug, Kenny, a listener of the podcast, unfortunately hurt his knee around the halfway mark and had to pull out from the race. So he was a DNF. But I got to talk to him quite a bit at the pre-race dinner. And even after the race, and got to meet his wife. And turns out his wife actually has spent time in the Ashland area. So you talk about a small world. You know, we didn't know some of the same people, but we were both familiar with the things around town. And Kenny told me at the pre-race dinner, he texted me, asked me if I was there. I texted him back. I said, hey, I'm getting ready to walk up to the podium area. I'm wearing a white shirt. And so he found me. And he told me that I look like just how I sound. So I wasn't really sure how to take that, but I'm taking that as a compliment because he probably meant it like that. So it was really good to see him. Hopefully Kenny will get his knee will recover, and he'll be able to get back out there when he's ready. But it was really good talking to him and getting to know him a little bit, because I'm sure we'll see him again. And, of course, he's a listener of the podcast, and it's always cool to meet people that listen to the podcast and at these events. That list is very short, but Kenny is on it. And, you know, I do encourage anybody that is a listener of the show, if they're doing any races that they hear me talk about, that I'm going to be at as a crew or a spectator or as a participant, send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com, and we can meet in person. That makes the world a lot smaller, and makes me appreciate putting out the podcast a lot more when I'm able to meet some of the folks that listen to it in person, which I always think is cool. Wanted to say one thing about one more thing about Kenny, also known as Slug. He has finished Mountain Mascus before. He was a finisher in 2008, and he's had a couple setbacks here lately due to injury, but there's no doubt that he'll be back out there, and we'll probably meet up at an event again. So it was really nice talking to you, Kenny, and your wife, and I wish you the best, and I'm sure that we'll see each other again somewhere down the road. The race director for this race that I mentioned earlier, his name is Clark Zeeland. In some weird ways, I met him for the first time, obviously, at the pre-race dinner. I went up and introduced myself, and I felt like I kind of knew him because I'd seen him in the movie Running Madness, which was a documentary of Western States 100. And Clark ran that, and a part of the documentary, he's in that. He's much, you know, much younger. Well, not noticeably younger, but I think he was in college at the time. He's gone on to get his PhD in recreation and leisure activities. It's what it says on Wikipedia. I looked him up. It's Clark, Zeeland. Interesting PhD. He runs a something called Eco Events that he does these ultra things. Flawless race production. You know, I'm sure I picked up on a few things from his ability to put this event on for when we do the railroad run. I was very impressed with everything. It was just an excellent event. It's something I wish I could participate in, but I just don't think I'd be able to make the cutoff. All right, before we get to the email bag, which is kind of short this week, I want to just briefly mention the Harvest Run, which was run on October 21st, I think. The Mountain Maskist had 294 registered, according to the website, and 231 finishers. Several people did not start, and then, of course, there's always some DNFs in there. And what David Horton had said at the beginning, I don't know if you remember hearing it in one of the clips, is that 18% of the people that start it won't finish it. And he said it's just always that way because of that tough cutoff of being 12 hours, especially being a mountain race. Okay, the Harvest Run, our church group came in second out of the churches, which was pretty cool. One of my colleagues at work, her church group came in first. They did really good. There was 227 participants in both the 5K and the 10K. There was only 79 people that did the 10K. The winning time was 31 minutes, 40 seconds, and the 5K had the bulk of the people, which was 148. 17:01 was the winning time there. Notable times were my own 55:47, which is notable for me because, first of all, that's one of the in recent memory, faster 10K times I've ran. Well, I guess that's the first time I've run a 10K in quite some time. But I had already done 12 miles. I'd already done 12 miles on my feet before I did that. And I felt really good. I wish that was marathon day. Rodney came in at 48:36, and Tom, Ashley and Tom came in at a 48:24. I think they ran together for the most part. I lost them right at the beginning because I knew they were going too fast for me. So that's the Harvest Run. That's an annual run that's done here in Ashland. That benefits West Hanover Emergency Action Team. And this year also benefited Hanover Habitat for Humanity. Okay, well, let's get to the email bag section of the show and see who checked in this week. All right, heard from Sean out of Paso Robles, California. I think I got that pronounced right. Sean, thanks for checking in. I've heard from Sean before. He really liked episode 141. You always look at the highest flag. Sean's been having some trouble with his training lately. No energy, lethargy, no matter how many or how many few miles. He just can't seem to get into the zone. But he did say that he listened to the recent podcast and felt like he was running alongside me the whole time. And next thing he knew, he had completed 5 miles, and he had really put not even one thought into his pace of going up the hills. Now, Sean, it's that kind of stuff right there that makes me want to keep doing the podcast. I mean, that's the kind of feedback that obviously makes me feel really good, and I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to that. And I'll share something here that I've done before, which is going to sound very, very egocentric, but I have actually listened, when I've got into a little bit of a funk, I've actually gone back and loaded some of my old podcasts on my own iPod just to listen to myself. In a state of mind that was different on the day I produced the show than I am currently when I'm running. And sometimes that helps me get into a nice zone. I don't know if that would help you if you went and listened to some old shows, because I try to stay pretty positive and upbeat in the podcast. So I've actually done that before. And matter of fact, I'm running the Richmond Marathon tomorrow, and I'm loading my iPod with some older shows that were significant to me, one of them being is episode number 10, which was mental toughness. So anyway, it's just a suggestion, and hopefully that doesn't sound too self-centered, but you know, I save all the shows I do, obviously, on my hard drive, and I've gone back periodically from time to time and pulled out old ones and put them on my iPod and listened to them when I'm out there running, just to kind of see where I was at that time, if I'm kind of in a funk. So it's just an idea. And I appreciate you listening to the show, as always. And again, all you other listeners out there, if you want to drop me a line at ashanddave@gmail.com, I'm always welcome. Always welcome comments. Usually I just prefer positive ones. And if you want to just tell me what you're up to, that'd be great. Also, wanted a special thank you. I heard from Sandy. Special thank you goes to her. Sandy is a partial sponsor for me at the Race the Graveyard 100K, and it's very much appreciated. It's the first time that's happened to me, and matter of fact, it's kind of happened at the same time that I've actually got a free entry into the Richmond Marathon. The only thing being that I'm not running under my God-given name, just due to circumstances. I've got a free entry that I don't have to pay for, but it's not going to be under my regular name. So I can't afford the PR because then I won't be able to claim it. But anyway, many thanks to Mechanicsville Dave for that. You know who you are. So I've got kind of two
Two real nice gifts here lately. Obviously heard from Slug, and we talked at the race there. He says he's going to take some time off from running. He's going to get started back at the YMCA for some cross training and core work, and then he's going to start training for the three spring 50Ks that he really likes to do, and that's the Holiday Lake, Promised Land, and Terrapin Mountain. I think Terrapin Mountain is, yeah, that's a 50K. So, you know, Slug, I've heard good things about those three, and I would not be surprised if either me or one of my friends is going to do one of those. So, even though they're trail races, I don't think Holiday Lake is all trail, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll probably see each other in the spring. And thanks for the, I do appreciate the well wishes for the Richmond Marathon. Also heard from Matt. Matt is a member of Team Incognito. He thanked me for the shout out in the last podcast and wishes me luck at Richmond. He's going to be out of town, but we'll definitely catch up with you soon, Matt. Appreciate that. Also, this is a good one. Heard from Tim. This was good. He commented on the cheating episode, and I think it was 141. And he said our Catholic guilt complex won't allow us to cheat. And I think you're right on that, Tim. Appreciate you sending in that email. Short and to the point. Well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. And that's it for the email bag section of the show. We only had a few this week. Feel free to send me an email at ashanddave@gmail.com. We will put a link in the show notes to the ultrarunnerpodcast.com. Highly recommend that, especially the interview with Frank Bosnich. And I'll be running the Richmond Marathon November 12th, which is right now it's Friday the 11th. I'm producing this the day before that. I feel like I'm ready. It's just trying to break 5 hours. Got nothing to prove to anybody. I'm actually going to use it as a – I mean, obviously, it's a marathon, and I'll get a finishing medal if I finish. But it's going to be a long training run to try a couple different interval methods and fueling strategies for down the line. And I'll see some people there that I know. And I'm actually going to probably line up with Ashlyn Tom because he is a pacer for the 415 pace group. Now, here's a guy that ran a 54 whatever miler last Saturday, and he's a week later, he is pacing the 415 marathon. Now, he's a Boston qualifier, so he can handle it. Plus, he's already a marathon maniac, so it only fits that he would run a couple marathons in a couple weeks. And one other shout-out I want to make is to my good friend Kelly from Team Incognito. She has been very incognito, it seems, and I think she's done 2 marathons in the last 2 months, or maybe more. I don't know if she's running Richmond or not, but hopefully we'll see you soon, Kelly. I think you used to listen to the show at one point in time, not sure. And haven't heard from Crash Crider or Snugs in quite some time, so I'm thinking they might have quit listening to the show. If you haven't, stand up and be counted, you guys. Snuggy Bear and Crider, send me an email, ashanddave@gmail.com. Also, haven't heard from Christina in a while at Arizona, so if you're still listening, shoot me an email, let me know what you're up to. All right, this is Ashlyn Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. And don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.